True, you are correct, Brianna.
Wow, so many.
And first of all, let me
Wonderful.
speak. Like, I wanted to say, well, thank you. Appreciated your beloved beta classes. I joined one again, and it's really like nourishing. And in my city, it's like 3:45 in the morning. Maharaj says, you like need to get up. Then it goes back to basics. Every Thursday, it's
Oh, right, because
awesome.
it's exactly like
That's
an hour.
awesome.
It's like they follow each other.
That's
Oh my God. Okay, which is like this morning, because that was last night in Salt Lake City. They just did Gita class this morning,
Today is
Thursday. And so this Thursday morning
it's
is Wednesday
Wednesday night
night.
right now. Yeah, that was this morning.
That's so funny.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for I love anyone who's interested in this. It's wonderful that you are. I'm not sure how we should start. We can start with maybe talking about Prapanna-jivanamritam and Sharanagati as a conception. One thing I will say is I have read a lot of philosophy, okay, a lot, unfortunately. And there is a foreword to this book written by Gurmarsh in his own English. And it is the most compact, all-encompassing philosophical treatise ever written. It is so good. Absolutely amazing. Every single word covers every line of thought that's possible under the larger headings and ultimately leads to the conclusion of the supremacy of Sharanagati. And then, what is the Sharanagati that Mahaprabhu taught? In this foreword, it is really, truly an amazing work and an amazing gift. Radhasundari asked, what does Prapanna-jivanamritam mean?
Oh yeah, it's a great, it's an absolutely amazing title.
It is an amazing title, and there's kind of a purport, which is this translation, positive and progressive immortality. And if you read the foreword by Gurmarsh, ultimately that's the conclusion. Gurmarsh covers the philosophies of bhakti, the philosophies of exploitation, that you just need to manipulate the world in just the right way and manipulate your mind in just the right way. And if you do that, then finally you'll be happy in this world. There's a lot of people kind of telling you how to do that. And then there's the philosophies of mukti, which is this world is horrible, it's false, it's fake, get out. And then, generally we call those Mayavadi or Buddhist philosophies. The Mayavadis is called Sayujya Mukti is what is propounded by the Mayavadis. Brahma Nirvana is propounded by the Buddhists. But it's essentially the same thing. You have to eliminate existence as an individual in order to have any satisfaction. The experience of diversity and individuality is the cause of your suffering, and you need to end that immediately. So those are essentially all the philosophies of the world, really. Some version of bhakti, which is just organize yourself properly and then you can enjoy this world. And mukti, which is you can never enjoy this world and your individuality is the problem and you need to get rid of it. And that kind of covers everything else. And what is remaining is Vaishnavism, pure. And what is pure Vaishnavism? There's some positive world, there's some positive purpose in experience. And different theistic lines have some different ideas of what is the positivity of that experience. But for the most part, they have some tinge of bhakti and mukti with them. A lot of Christianity is disturbed by some idea of God being the order supplier. Hey, God, I need this. Or God being like the rule maker. Hey, follow my rules and you go to happy land forever. That's like the general structure of most religion is like, here's some rules, do those things, and you're going to go to happy unicorn land. And that's also incomplete. So the real idea is how do you live in positivity forever within diversity and variety? And the only answer is as a propanna, as a surrendered soul. So that's Guru Maharaj's kind of outline that's in this foreword. And what does it mean to live a life of surrender? How do you practically live that in your life, like now? And, you know, Guru Maharaj says some very, very intense things in terms of practicing life. But I want to read this little couple sentences at the end of Propanda Jivanamritam. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is sweetness and magnanimity combined, openly announced that we are all natural slaves of the highest entity. But this is slavery to the great force of love and beauty. The cause of all reality is love and beauty. We want to voluntarily give ourselves to that. It is the greatest fortune to be utilized in any way by the absolute existence, absolute knowledge, absolute beauty. I mean, Satchidananda, to be in harmony with the highest center. No one is forced and no one is barred. But this is the soul's intrinsic nature. It means you can't be, this is Mahaprabhu saying, this is the highest ideal of your life, but you have to choose that. No one's going to force you, but also no one will prevent you. So that means you have to start utilizing your consciousness, make a choice of life. What is your ideal? And start to move toward that. So the refinement of that ideal is what this book is about. What is the ideal of a surrendered life? So positive and progressive immortality.
On the couch.
So Sharanagati is kind of enshrined as the teachings of Mahaprabhu and the purpose of existence. The greatest choice that you can do with your free will is to surrender. And Sharanagati is a very interesting word because Sharanam means shelter and Agati means come. So Sharanam means like home, like to come to your homeland, to come to your home shelter. That is the meaning of the word Sharanagati. It means like this is not a foreign land to you. This is actually your very nature. And to stop a relationship of suspicion, fear, exploitation with reality, but to actually start to perceive that love and beauty is behind everything and to willingly give yourself as a tool to be utilized in that. That's the highest expression of your own free will, but it must be entered into freely. So generally what Guru is giving you is an idea of what to do with your free will. You have to do it. You have will. Otherwise, what are you? Everything's just dead without free will. You are something, and you have something to give. But it has to be a conscious and honest choice. And the presentation of that choice as an ideal of life, that's what Mahaprabhu is giving, this highest presentation of the way to choose within the whole spectrum of choices in infinity, to choose Sharanagati as the point of your life. And then if you accept that, then the question is, okay, well then what do you do? Like how do you do that? So, what's the thoughts? What's the questions? What's the deal? I'm not gonna just like blah, 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 blah.
I have like a natural question, but it's just interesting. Any favorite chapter resonates with you?
Honestly, I love the first chapter. They're all amazing. And, you know, Guru Maharaj divides them up into different helpful words from the Lord, from the Vaishnavas, from the scripture. And then there's the chapters on each of the six limbs of Sharanagati. So Daina, Atmanivedana, Gopri, Vivarna, etc. They each have their own chapter. In Propanda Jivanamritam. And all these things, it's like we're not actually, unfortunately, as devotees, we're not actually thinking about these things. I mean, frankly. Like if I ask like 90% of devotees, hey, what are the six limbs of surrender? I mean, you know, Most of the time, people are going to look at you like, the six limbs of surrender, right? So like Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote
she's looking panicked. Exactly.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a songbook called Sharanagati.
Those are the nine
processes of devotion. Doina Atmani Vedana Gotri Virvarna. So in the first verse, the first song of the
Bhakti Pratiko, of the book, Bhakti Anukul.
Sharanagati, the first song is called Sharanagati. Oh, good. Right, and it says, right, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Jive Doya Kori, Swaparsha, the Sri Dhamma, Sahaya Avatari, Atyanta Durlabha Prem, Kori Bare Don, Shikaya means teaching, Sharanagati, Bhakti Rapram. Mahaprabhu came to teach Sharanagati. That's the life of the devotee. That's the thing that gives life to any of the practices, is that you have some ideal within you and your practice is moving toward that. Otherwise, the practice has no context. You're just doing stuff. Like, what are you going to wear? Well, I'm going to put some cloth around me. Well, why? It's Indian. Okay. Like, is that good? Is Indian good? Okay, good. I'll just wear some Indian cloth. Like, what are we doing? Like, why are you going to do that? There has to be motion, intention, ideal within your life that you're moving towards something. Otherwise, all this stuff has no context. You're just doing it. Like, okay, why are you doing it? How does it help you move toward where you want to go? Where do I want to go? Oh, I haven't thought about that. Oh, okay, well, maybe we should start there. What are you doing? Where are you going? And then the habits that you're building, how are they helping you move toward that? Like the sadhana has context. It's not just like empty. But the context requires the ideal. And that's sort of really what the point of this is. This is your ideal. This is the thing that is the way to live in positivity, meaning positive experience, real contribution and relationship and feeling, in dynamic, in motion reality, eternally. That's what Prapanna Jivanamrita means. Positive and progressive. You feel motion, like you're moving forward in the relativity of the infinite. Higher and higher degrees of experience. Actually living, not eliminating diversity, but within the infinite variety of reality to live a positive life. That's like an ideal. Does that sound like a good ideal? Okay. Then try to move toward it. And then everything has its context in that journey. Mm. But the contemplation of the ideal, what is Sharanagati? Why am I doing this? That's like the most important thing. The ideal. Guru Maharaj said the ideal is the most important thing. Why? Because whatever ideal someone has, that's what they're moving toward. So Mahaprabhu's come to give the ideal of Sharanagati. Well, we have to contemplate, discuss, ponder, really start to consider what that is. Otherwise, it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's actually like the most amazing thing to me that this book is broken up into these six chapters, because it says, how do you live a life forever that's always in evolution, right? Positive and progressive means it's going through transformation. How do you live forever through transformation? Because you think about it, like at some point in time, some of these characters that we're reading about in the scriptures, they have a new service that's coming to them all the time. It's not like they're like, is there a God? Isn't there a God? Oh, that's the big deal. At some point in time, you're fully faithful and you've given up everything behind, but it doesn't mean that things have become boring. Yeah, but it's saying inside of these six qualities, there's actually infinite movement. There's movement inside of these qualities. That's what all the scriptures are trying to tell you. They're trying to say, hey, if you can actually start to let this wash over your consciousness, not only will you not feel the friction with the other things in your life that are causing all sorts of troubles, but you might actually be able to contribute at some point in time, right? Like you might actually have a part to play at some point in time. And Guru Maharaj expresses that actually inside of Upadeshamrita. He says, for the surrendered soul, at some point in time, Krishna is actually going to give them an opportunity to participate in service, which I mean, like, just that.
Deeper participation in the pastime.
Deeper, right? It means like you're going to get a chance to what? Surrender deeper and sacrifice. And you may find yourself in contact with a deeper reality. Right, because ultimately, if there's infinite layers of consciousness, and then Guru Maharaj's own words, he says, each layer of consciousness is surrounded by a moat. A moat of what? Right? You know, like in the old medieval castles, there's a moat that goes around the castle. Yeah. So then what is this thing that is surrounding each layer of higher consciousness? Must be more surrender, must be more sacrifice. You don't get to just go jump and like inspect whether you want to be in that service plane. Right, you'll have to come into a different, you will have to be a different you in order to be in that plane. Right, so it's saying, how can you be positive and progressive through eternity? Which is an amazing premise for, I mean, it's like the most, and then Jivanamritam, right? Amrita means deathless, right? So at some point in time, think about it, Bhagavad Gita is alluding to, there's a person who, if they give up their body and they jump into a new one, it's the same as changing an outfit. It's like not a big deal anymore. So then what is exciting in life if like death and life are not the most exciting things? Service, excitement, like jump into your life, you know, like in terms of like, oh my God, how could I potentially contribute to the next moment? Are you still looking for your phone? Okay. Suter, I think you're sitting on her phone.
Oh my God, I am. I wasn't touching it with my body. That's why I didn't feel it.
So then, but it's an amazing thing. So you go, okay, so why focus on these six limbs of surrender? What's hiding inside of these things that's so attractive that they're saying like the humility in the heart of the devotee is so attractive that the upper world will take notice, that substance is so gorgeous and so beautiful to the upper world that their only job is to pull you into the next service, right? And so then this thing that seems like, have you memorized like the six limbs of surrender, has all of a sudden like fully changed, like revolutionarily. And it's like, you actually can barely have, maybe it's even not possible to have a spiritual life without actually having the six limbs of surrender. They're that, Guru Maharaj says, his own words, that quote unquote service without Sharanagati inside of it can be vikarma, can be bad karma, bad karma. It's not even, which is like, you know, like when you hear that, you're like, well, I'm doing service. And it's like, it must be infused with this type of soft-hearted expression, right? Like, that's what they're saying. Like, devotees looking like kind of hard maybe on the exterior, but their interior is so soft, right? You're saying, what are these qualities? Well, the first one, humility. Well, first in that kirtan, but not necessarily first the way they're listed, but humility, right? And the beginning of humility is, what an amazing substance. First, I'm not the center of everything. That's the beginning of humility, right? Like I'm in reference to something wonderful. I've come into contact with something greater than myself, right? What's the problem of the mind? Everything needs to listen to me. So the very like basis platform for some type of transformation to happen is I'm in reference to something wonderful. And then this whole book is a meditation on that, right? And this is Guru Maharaj's only like published writing of his own expression of his thoughts on all of these different verses, which is like extremely.
This book was first published in 1944. At that time, the mutt was like a hut. And this is Guru Maharaj's contemplation after leaving Gaudiya Math. And Gaudiya Math is a very amazing organization, amazing temples, amazing devotees, amazing program, amazing kirtan, amazing everything.
Yep.
If you hear Gaudiya Math kirtan, it's like actually like insanely beautiful. And Guru Maharaj left. And his contemplation is, what are we doing here? And it's an important question to ask ourselves. Because why did he leave? It's not because the kirtan wasn't very good and the temples weren't getting swept very well and the archan wasn't perfect enough or whatever. Like, it's really important to understand that when Guru Maharaj left and is contemplating, his thought is, what are we doing? What is this actual thing? And his answer to that question is Prapanda Jivanamrita. So it's really the essence of what the practice of Vaishnavism is. The essence of following Mahaprabhu is this, you know, these six limbs of surrender and how you actually bring them into your life and practice them. And that's why Guru Maharaj comes out with some very, very radical conclusions. Like, for example, nothing external is required for your success. Okay? That means, number one, the problem is we have an internal misorientation. And number two, the solution is the internal misorientation needs to be orientated properly, right? So that means the problem is internal and the solution is internal. And so that is very important, right? And what are we moving toward? That's ultimately what's going to make the solution have value. And the contemplation of that ideal and the practice of what is necessary to move forward, that's really important. And then what are the six limbs of surrender? How do you bring them into your life? What's the most important of the six limbs of surrender? You know, these are huge questions. And then, you know, Guru Maharaj's answer is from Srila Jiva Goswami, Saraswati Thakur, Sanatana Goswami, who all said, the most important of the six limbs of surrender is Goptritve Varanam, embracing the guardianship of the Lord. And then, what is the practice of that? That's how all these things come into context. When Guru Maharaj is saying, the environment is your friend. Embracing the guardianship of the Lord is a very profound idea. It means my Lord is my guardian. And then Guru Maharaj defines what guardian means when he says that. Guardian means who knows what is good for me more than I know and who wants what is good for me more than I want. He is my guardian, and my guardian is in charge of my environment. There's nothing that exists that is not permeated by Paramatma, and my Lord is placing this environment around me. And this set of experiences that are flowing over the field of my consciousness. He is my guardian. So then everything else makes sense. When Guru Maharaj is always saying, harmonize with your environment. Why would you harmonize with your environment? There's another viewpoint that says, this world is all material world. It's all full of asuras and it's bad and we need to get out. Okay, so you're going to harmonize with that? Like, how does that even make sense? Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. The actual proper perspective is my guardian is behind this reality and he wants good for me. And this set of experience is coming to me and I'm going to adjust to that. So then when Guru Maharaj is saying harmonize with your environment, he's saying some sweetness is coming to you that you're resisting. Now that's highlighting where some issue is inside of your consciousness that you would never be able to find yourself. And it's mysterious. So now I have to somehow move through this circumstance that I find very, very difficult. That is embracing his guardianship. And the first thing is, my Lord who loves me just gave me this. I trust this. Beyond my mind is going, no, 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 no. And my soul is saying, yes, 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 yes. And I trust this, and I'm going to turn into it. Now, that may be embracing his guardianship. Because otherwise, even if you say the word in English, it's like, the heck does that even mean? Like, you know, I mean, the words, you know what embracing is, you know what his means, and you know what guardianship means. Like, embraces guardian, like what? What is it saying? My guardian is giving me my experiences, and I embrace them, especially when it becomes a difficult circumstance. Feel how your mind wants to resist the circumstance. And now think about turning your whole, what happens when you embrace, right? You have to do something that physiologically you don't want to do. Like, even if you're in a situation where you feel uncomfortable, what happens? You put your shoulders forward, you cover your chest, you cross your arms. You're doing this thing where it's just like, right? You do it like subconsciously even. But you're doing that to the experiences of your life. You're like, right? Like, how do I get away, right? And your mind is going like, I need to fly somewhere else. Or I need to get drunk. Or I need to go, like, watch a movie. I need to get my mind off this. I need to get my body out of here. This is not working, right? Now what happens when you embrace? It's like, you have to turn toward that. Open yourself up and embrace it. That's hard. That's real spiritual life. That's actual practice. And why? Because he's good. You can say, oh, God is good. Blah, blah, blah. It's just words. God's good. No, but God really is good. And he really is your guardian. And you have to know this, not like a theory, not like, wow, man, this philosophy is perfect. Whoa. You know, because it is. It's exquisite. It's all-encompassing. It's absolutely perfect. But that's not the point. The point is you have to live this and know it in a real way, not some kind of like theory that's like existing off over there that like really looks good on paper or something. It's like actual life. So when Guru Maharaj is saying, okay, practice Gopritve Varnam, what does that mean? Then it moves into Lord Brahma Shloka, Tatenu Kampam Susamik Shamano, which Guru Maharaj quotes again and again and again and again. Tatenu Kampam Susamik Shamano. Everyone knows the shloka. I hope. But it is an important shloka, and it's Lord Brahma who's speaking. Why Lord Brahma is speaking? He is the first acharya of our sampradaya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Lord Brahma is giving this shloka that Guru Maharaj quotes all the time. Tatenu Kampam Susamik Shamano. Like, this difficult circumstance has come to me by the grace of my guardian. And now I need to engage in susamiksha. Susamiksha means I have to examine myself and think, sweetness has come to me and I don't like it. What's wrong inside of me? What is my misalignment that this thing that's coming to me, I want to resist it and run away from it? That's susamiksha.
Anything that comes to you and you don't like it, you think, but if the environment is perfect and it's sweet, and I like anything and I don't like it, it's something wrong.
There's a really nice verse in Bhagavatam, which Guru Maharaj quotes. There's actually a very beautiful chapter in Sermons 1. It's called The Guardian Ruled Family. It is so nice. But in this chapter, there's a verse in Bhagavatam that says, Bhagavad Bhavam Atmana. We have to start to bring Krishna consciousness into our life. And that means the entire environment is infused with full consciousness. And his attentive glance, his attentive, meaning he's attentive to me, is giving me my experiences. And so we have to build this like layer of Krishna consciousness around us that nothing can come to me without me thinking of Krishna. If I hear a sound, I should think, oh, Krishna wants me to hear this. If I taste something, oh, Krishna wants me to taste this. If I'm in some circumstance, oh, Krishna wants me in this circumstance. It cannot happen. I mean, for me, like I studied quantum physics for some time. And for me, it's helpful to think of it like that. But however it's helpful for you to think about, just understand, nothing can happen without some higher sanction. It is impossible. It really is. Like, at a quantum level, I mean, this might be helpful for some people, or it might be totally just bullshit. I won't spend a lot of time on it. But at a quantum level, if you understand, it's called synchronicities. The number of synchronicities that need to occur within a wavelength of possibility, right? Everything's just a wave of potential. Okay, there's waves of potential that are existing in reality. And in order for something to manifest as a particle within this world that we're experiencing, there has to be synchronicities of many, 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 many waves just for an atom to exist. What to speak of a molecule? What to speak of trillions and trillions and trillions of molecules? Like, it's impossible, okay? Which means if it's possible, then it occurred. There is the Lord of quantum reality who is manifesting it, right? There's some observance of the Lord. Because the other thing that we can understand is that quantum reality interacts with, you know, consciousness. Consciousness is what defines it. And the overall consciousness, Krishna says, you know one field, meaning we have our own set of experiences. I know all the fields. So when everything is synchronizing to be what it is, okay, it is sanctioned. It is the Lord's will. We have to really actually know this. It is not a theory. The Lord's will is occurring. And if I have an issue with it, then I have an issue. Not that the issue is with reality. So like this practice of like, okay, His will has occurred, and now I have to move through it. Tatenu kampam susumikshima. Oh, I have some problem with this. Warren says, your first reaction should be, I have some fault. And the Lord's grace has come to me. His prashadam, Gurmar says. His prashadam has come to me, and I have some fault. And this is the way to make a rocket ship of progress of your life. Because every single situation in life is progressive. It's all coming from the will of the Lord. So Gurmar is saying, Bhagavad Bhavamatmana, you should not have a moment of experience that's not passing through Krishna consciousness. We're not thinking, oh, Krishna wants me to hear this. And also life becomes very magical and dynamic. Because now there's like so many inputs that are all coming by the grace of the Lord. And you're always thinking, oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. What is my service? Why did I hear this? Oh, I met this person. Think about a culture that is defined by this idea. Like in Vedic culture, what happens when you meet somebody? You say namaste. Why namaste? Some divine will, some impossible confluence of trillions and trillions of possibilities has brought you in front of me. How is it possible? How am I going to interact with that impossibility that just so happened? Namaste. Somehow divine will has brought you in front of me, and I'm searching what is my service, right? Like all that type of thing becomes reality. Oh, I'm in this circumstance. The impossible has occurred again, which is happening every second. The impossible is occurring. What's my service? So Gurmar says, everything coming in through Krishna consciousness. Krishna wants me to hear this. Krishna wants me to see this. Krishna wants me to meet this person. Krishna wants me to be in this circumstance, etc. That's everything coming in. And then everything going out, also through Krishna consciousness. I'm not interacting with the person. You know, maybe we might have a person that's annoying us or something. It's not about that. It's not like, oh my God, this guy's snoring or whatever it is. You know, like I can't sleep. It's not that. It's like, oh, Krishna wanted me to experience this. Then my question is, what's my output? It's not like, I mean, maybe it is to correct that person, but it's not that I care whether this person's corrected or not. I'm not like outcome consciousness. I'm looking for Oh, my Lord, what's my service? What do you wish from me in this circumstance? And then make an offering to the Lord, not some imposition of my will on the environment. Like, these are deep practices, but Gurmar is just talking about this in, you know, in the sermons, in the guardian consciousness. Like, you have to live a life of Krishna consciousness that's adaptive and that's offering and that's fully alive, that's not living a bifurcated, schizophrenic existence that, like, yeah, God is, you know, the source of everything and everything lives in him except for this right now. Like, you know, like, that's, like, literally is a cause of, like, schizophrenia. Like, you've got a schism in your cognition, you know what I mean, in your consciousness. It's like, it's all from the Lord. Nothing can exist without the Lord. He's the source of everything. Everything lives in him. And also, this shouldn't be happening. You know what I mean? It's just, it's actually full-on schizophrenia. It's literally like, it's a problem. Like, you cannot live like that. You can't have an integrated existence with that type of mentality. It's just totally off. So, you know, this basic idea, like this proper sambandha gyan of understanding that divinity is behind the reality that you experience, the experiences of your life, and in a way that's not demanding, but in a way that's very surrendered and seeking and dancing and joyful and like offering, experience your life, right? Not with this idea of these falsehoods that our mind has created, like, okay, that one was bad, that one was good, you know, like all these types of judgments, these labels that we're placing upon things with our mental system, it's completely wrong, like completely, like not the way of living. And that's why a devotee is like, a real devotee, they're like undisturbed in every circumstance. They're just ready to do their service.
You know, what's amazing too is that there's not much possibility for refinement without these qualities.
Yes.
Right? You're not going to make some changes. And if you think of, I mean, it's like a low level example, but I find it really helpful. Like, if you're around someone that's like a masterful instrument player and they're going to play you a little piece, maybe they play piano, maybe they play, you know, like some kind of stringed instrument, and they play something and you're like, you feel it, right? Like, you're crying. What did they hear? Oh, I just missed like this one timing and this one spot and this one little thing, and like, I could have done it better. There's something where like, we only want to hear that we're like the best at everything. And like, we want our egos to be like very aggrandized by the environment, and we want everyone else to also participate in our fantasy of us being the best at everything. And Krishna's being very kind and saying like, hey, I'm here to help you. You need to go through a little like refinement, actually. Like, you know, take it in. And like, what we take that as is like devastating pain. I mean, like, really, like, that's really what happens, is like the environment's coming and it just kind of revealed to you that you're not like the center of the universe and you're not the best. And like, you know, like, boom, like all of a sudden, like crisis upon crisis is occurring, instead of like, oh, his grace has come. I wonder how I should try and adapt to this very peculiar situation that I wasn't factoring in, right? Because like, you can say all the Mahabharata, all these characters, they're saying it again and again. They're stuck in these really intense situations, right? And these are all like saintly people, we can say. And they're all wrestling with these ideas of like, what am I supposed to do? Except for us, when we get a strange situation, we're like, what am I supposed to do? It must be that this person is bad, so I should never talk to them again, right? Like barely pausing with like, oh, like something is occurring And it happens over and over again. And like some transformation is requested of me. And I always find like this idea of like, you know, like an athlete or a performer, like what is a runner trying to do? They train for like hundreds and hundreds of hours to try and shave off a few seconds off of a mile, right? And then they finally run like their fastest PR.
And like personal record.
Personal record, right? They finally run like the speed, you know, that they were maybe shooting for. And there's like a feeling of like, if I only hit my foot on the ground, like in a slightly different way, if I only like change this, like I made one small change, like I eat like a slight, all of a sudden I could have some more speed. And this kind of mentality is actually like so nimble, right? Because you're starting to think, oh, if I could only adjust myself. And so all of these scriptures, they have this like very unusual kind of message of refinement ultimately, right? Because humility means I'm in reference to something that's bigger than me, that's working on me, right? And then there's like an openness where you're going, oh, like some message is coming and I might even be able to hear it if I wasn't full of myself all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you're going, oh, accepting his guardianship and these other qualities. They have some life inside of them of refinement. And then ultimately you can say for someone, like for the actual Prapanna Jiva Namritam, like for the actual surrendered soul, that's the way that they're surfing infinity, right? Because there is actually no end, right? Like Guru Maharaj's own definition of humility is humility means being open to infinite possibility. So someone who's actually open to infinite possibility could not be disturbed by any kind of external manifestation, because otherwise they're not open to infinite possibility.
I think it's very, very interesting to contemplate this, because, you know, a lot of times when devotees are thinking about being with Krishna, it sounds like such a beautiful ideal. Like, I want to go to the spiritual world and be with Krishna. But if you look at it from a little bit of a different perspective, it all of a sudden becomes extremely intense.
Yeah.
And you think like, okay, the quality of devotee is that they're open to infinite possibility. That's real humility. That means you look at the spectrum of possibility that could occur and you're ready for any of it. That's an amazing person. But that's the kind of person who can participate in the pastimes. Otherwise, what's going to happen? The pastimes got intense. You know, Krishna's a baby, you know, not a baby boy. Well, I mean, you could say Krishna's a baby boy. But, you know, Krishna's playing with his friends. And, like, Agasura comes. And the cowboys are like, let's go check it out. Let's go inside. Like, are we kind of ready for that? You're going to go in there? You're going to die? You're going to jump in the river and die? Like, it's not like, woo, I want to go with Krishna and play with my cow. You know, it's like, no, you're going to go play with God, and it's going to be intense, and it's going to be amazing, and it's going to have all the rasa, the juice pulled out of your soul and flood into your soul. Like, are you ready to give yourself to the Lord? It has to be a person. Guru Maharaj says, only a Sharanagata can participate in Vilas. Vilas means the pastimes, the movement of reality. Why? Because otherwise you're going to be like, you know, a little kid holding onto the doorway when your parents are trying to get you going to bed, you know? You're like, oh, no! No, this shouldn't happen! No! You know, it's like you can't be that. You got to flow and dance with it and contribute to what's happening. You know what I mean? It's dynamic and full of life. And it's not just like, wee! Yay! Another day with the cows! You know, and it's like, no, Danikasura's showing up and it's intense. And it's not just like, woo, it's like, whoa, you know, and are you going to go through that? Or are you going to be like, I don't want to do this. Can I go into like nowhere land? Oh, Shunyavad, like the vacuum? Fantastic. You know, like you're not going to do that. Like you have to be a person who's ready for anything. And in our case, it's not like ready for anything. It's like, my boss was mean to me today. You know, and it's like, okay, well, that's where you're at, and that's where we're at, that's where I'm at. It's like, okay, now go through that. Can you offer that to Krishna? That your boss was mean to you today? It's like, you want to participate in the movement of reality. You have to be ready to participate in the movement of reality. And the circumstances of your life, when seen in the Vaishnava perspective, are the exact things that are needed for you to move through. So you, in your particular set of little resistances, are getting those resistances ground down a little bit. And those egotistic impositions on reality ground down a little bit. And they're just right, so perfectly, surgically correct by the Lord. And there's a song, maybe we can sing it tonight, where it says, Krishna's the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
And
Krishna is the doctor.
He's curing what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls Bhava Rog. Bhava Rog means like fever or disease. And he's curing the disease in our relationship. We have a broken, diseased relationship with reality. And that cure is coming to us. And that's what Guru Maharaj's Siddhanta is. He's searching for you. The cure is coming to you. But can we turn into it? Can we happily go through it? Can we willingly make a burning sacrifice of whatever it is that we need to burn to move forward? And the testament is coming from so many devotees. Go through that storm. Go through that fire. You're not going to feel less. You're going to feel more. You're going to like yourself better. It's going to be a better thing. Trust and walk through it and see what happens. You know, it's an overall perspective of faith that this thing that's coming to me is exactly what I need. And I want to give it. And if I have to give it for the rest of my life, I will happily give it. Like, I want to live my life as a sacrifice to you. And that's why when you see these intense pastimes, like, for example, you know, there's so many examples given, but they're showing us the mood of these devotees. When Krishna has the headache, everyone knows the story. He's like, oh, I need the foot dust of one of my devotees. And people who have a super superficial perspective, what are they saying? Oh, I can't give Krishna my foot dust. I'll go to hell. Right? And the gopis are thinking, oh, Krishna needs my foot dust? Here, immediately take it to him, please. Hey, you're going to go to hell. Yeah, I know, like, whatever. Here, take my foot dust. And then one devotee asked Guru Maharaj, did they go to hell? And Guru Maharaj said, yes. But what is hell, actually? In our mind, we think, oh, I went to a planet, it's a hellish planet, da 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 da. But it's a different idea of life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Atmanivedana, a very beautiful song, Atmanivedana, remember, is one of the six limbs of surrender, Atmanivedana. He says, Seva sukha dukha parama sampada nashaye avidya dukha. Seva sukha dukha, in service, happiness and difficulty. Parama sampada, they're supreme gifts. Nashaye avidya dukha, they destroy the misery of ignorance. And there's another one, another line in that same song where Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, difficulties encountered in your service shall be the source of great joy. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a different plane of life. Our material mind immediately thinks, oh, you're going to be in hell? You're going to suffer. No. There's a whole nother level of experience. Just like when the cowherd boys, what do they say? Kaliya serpent has poisoned the Jamuna. Krishna jumps in, what happens? They're all dead. But happily, their body is dead. Then, of course, they get brought back to life. But they don't know that. They don't know, oh, I'm going to get brought back. It's like I'm ready to give myself to this circumstance no matter what. And there's another song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur where it's Manasa Deho Geho, another very beautiful song of surrender. It says, Marubi Rakhobi Joy Chatohar, which Guru Maharaj quotes a lot. Like when you offer yourself to the Lord, there has to be a mood. Marubi, you may slay me. Rakhobi, you may protect me. Joy Chatohar, I'm your servant. Nitya Das Prati Tuaya Dikar, I'm your eternal servant and you are my master. That much trust in the Lord, that even if he wants you to be killed, okay, I give this happily. We have to move into that. But like, that's freedom. That's actual freedom. When you're not living in this cloistered fear of particular circumstances, but ready to give whatever you are for what's needed. And if you want to participate in the play of the Lord, it has to move out of sort of like this, you know, children's cartoon kind of like idea of what the play of the Lord is and into some intensity where the real sacrifice is required and the real juice, you know, the real rasa of the experience of the soul is flowing. And that cannot be entered into with any type of restriction where it's just like, I'd love to be a part of your Krishna pastimes, Krishna, as long as I don't die. Like, really? Like, really? Like, would anybody even really say that? Like, no, you wouldn't say that because you already know if you're speaking to the Lord, oh, you are such sweetness. And it's like, if you want me to die, here, take this life, no problem. Like, that's actual real life and real freedom. And it's the way to look into the spectrum of possibility that's coming toward you and say, okay, like Rai said, humility means being open to infinite possibility. Then you're free. You're not captured, actually. If you're the type of person who can look at the spectrum of possibility that's coming toward you and be ready for any of it, you are a free person. You're a person of some serious substance, and you're going to be joyful at all moments. That's actual life. It's real life, not living in a scared little cloistered circumstance with animal consciousness that says, you know, like Bhagavatam is a very famous verse. It says, Pashu Buddhim Imam Jahi. Pashu Buddhim means the idea that I'm an animal, right? When you're an animal, what happens with an animal? They're terrified of dying, and they just get governed by these fears and these impulses. And Guru Maharaj said, that's a mania. But that mania will capture you, too. I mean, just like the animal. It's like, I'm not like an animal. Oh, really? What's the difference? I cook my food. You know, it's like, or whatever. It's like, what are you different than an animal? You know, it's like it's a mania. And Guru Maharaj says, abandon this mania that you're an animal. You're not. You're a soul. And start to live like a soul. And then these little incarnations that we go through, they're all amazing. They're all just opportunities for service. And it's really actually the truth. And the whole spectrum of the experience of the infinite becomes open. Not just, God, I want this. You know? And it's like, you are just literally perpetuating your own prison. You're perpetuating your own prison and demanding that God buy into your little tiny-minded crap. You know, and then you're casting judgment on him when he doesn't. Oh, you sure didn't do the blah, blah, blah. It's like so insane. But can you understand that he loves you more than you love yourself? And that what he's going to give you is going to bring you somewhere that's beyond what you even understand is good. Like that kind of trust, that type of real faith, that's Mahaprabhu. That's Sharanagati. That's Chaitanya Saraswamat. That's actual life that we're meant to lead and not be cowed down by really, really small ideas. Like even Dhruva Maharaj, you know, we always say the thing. I mean, Dhruva Maharaj had like a big idea. I mean, you could say within the world, like most of us are just like, I want a better car, please, you know, or whatever it is, some stupid little idea, or like, you know, a big house or what. I mean, it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, it's tiny. And that's the whole story of Dhruva Maharaj. It's like he, you know, his grandfather's Uttanapada. He's like a Manu. He's like controlling sectors of the universe. And like
his grandfather, Svayambhuva Manu.
Svayambhuva Manu, right. And then Uttanapada is the son. Anyways, whatever.
I can't remember the whole his point father's is, name, but his
we're
grandfather,
talking about
Svayambhuva
way bigger
Manu.
Things that most of us are thinking about, you know. And Dhruva Maharaj is humiliated, and he's like, I want a bigger kingdom. And I want to have more than even my grandfather. That's how, you know, you're going to humiliate me. I want more. I'm going to be bigger and better. And Narada Muni's like, ooh, five-year-old boy in the forest. What are you doing here? Oh, I was humiliated. Narada Muni's like, very good. Okay, let's see. You have some good determination. You're not afraid of all the tigers in the jungle. Okay. Then you close your eyes halfway, have some meditation, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Can you do that? Yes. Okay. Then he's real intense prayer, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Fearless. He wants his revenge. And what he wants is actually a lot bigger than what a lot of us want. But still, the minute he sees the feet of the Lord, just the feet, he's fully in meditation on the feet of the Lord. Narada Muni said, meditate on the feet of the Lord. And then suddenly, meditation stopped. He can't see the feet of the Lord in his mind. And he opens his eyes. There's the feet of the Lord. Actually, the Lord appeared in front of him. And immediately, all his desire feels like trash. Like trash. It's like, what was I thinking? Who cares about any of this? It's ridiculous. Just the sight of the nail of your toe is filling me with like blissful joy that I can't, like, why was I like a kingdom? It's like, it's ridiculous. It's garbage. And that's the actual truth. Like, don't allow yourself to be captured and controlled and like emotionally just dominated by these tiny little events in the tiny little prison of your like limited, you know, sphere of experience and desire. You know what I mean? We have such a tiny sphere of experience and all of our desires are captured in that tiny little sphere. And then we're just like casting judgment on reality. Like, oh my God, yay, it happened, you know? Or like, oh my God, it didn't happen and I don't think it will. You know, or whatever. It's just like, but we're like, it's not fake. Like, you know, I mean, it hurt. I mean, you know, I'm not exempt. Like, it hurts sometimes. You know, a bit of it's we're the ones creating that prison. And give the prison is a prison of energy. The only person who can sustain your prison is you. You're giving your energy to that ego and that little tiny mind and the little cloister of your desires and the tiny pathetic desire, you know, like demands on reality, right? These little, really tiny, it's just like, you know, a real sadhu is going to come and go like, oh, your potential is so, like Gurudev says, you don't know your potential. One time Govinda Maharaj said, you don't know your own potential, but I do. That's what Gurudev said. It's like these great devotees are coming and saying, oh, you fallen souls, you're living on the surface of an ocean of nectar, and you're just getting tossed and turned in these little superficial waves and going like, yay, oh no, yay, oh no. Like, you know, and you're not just diving into life, you know, without your little terrified restrictions. So the path forward is Sharanagati. Start to open yourself up to possibility and to understand the sweetness and grace of the Lord that is coming to us even beyond our own desire to want it. And our main path is to adjust ourselves to his sweet will. And in that lies our advancement, our progression in Krishna consciousness. We might have like all kinds of ideas of progressions of Krishna consciousness, right? It's like, oh, I need to get better at this, or I got to put my dhoti on faster so that I'm not late for, you know, RT or whatever. And that's not that that's bad. Don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is, all of that should hopefully prepare you for a moment where you actually have to dig a little deeper. And that is your real progression. All the other little progressions are coming to prepare you for the moment of your real progression. And that has to be gone into. Because all the other ideas of progression that we might have in our small state, they're actually fantasies, they're concoctions. They're in some ways made up. But the thing that's real is the thing that you actually have to go through. That's the real progression. And to build the trust in the Lord that if I go through this, I won't be less. That my prospect is contained within his will. Right? That my highest prospect, what is really possible for me, in such a grand way, is contained in his will. And in that mood, go through this little thing that we have to go through and to offer ourselves to our next day and our next day to see the sweet will of the Lord in our life. That's moving into a dynamic life of Sharanagati. That, our teachers are telling us, just trying to make an offer. Okay, thoughts?
The other processes of devotional service, I mean, Sharanagati, embracing the Lord's guardianship.
Doña?
Humility?
Yes. Atmanivedana?
Giving oneself?
Yes. So, giving with full self?
One thing I always like about Atmanivedana is give who you are.
Yes.
Not who you pretend to be, who you are. Which,
not,
yes, it's
not who you will be, but who you are.
Who
now.
You are. Like, throw who you are towards the Lord. Right? It's saying Atma Nivedana, right? And it's not, it's like no facades. He knows who we are, anyways. And we're trying to take a posture of throwing ourselves, and we don't actually know what that means, right? And so that's a nice kind of meditation on Atmanivedana. It's like you throw yourself towards that, towards him.
And confidence in the Lord's protection in any circumstance
and
that we're in.
It feels natural.
Yes.
When you do these things, it feels like home comfort.
Yes.
It feels natural. It's like, and then you know, oh, this is the right thing. You know, the other stuff was a fight. And that was the ego fighting.
Yeah.
When you let go and you embrace the Lord's guardianship and humility, then it feels natural. You feel the strength, the sacrifice, the surrender.
Yes.
I mean, it's happened to me.
How do you all? It's true.
And then you don't have any doubt.
Yes.
You know that you're on the proper path. You're doing the right thing. You know what I mean? That Lord and the
and then the last two are embracing what is favorable and rejecting what is unfavorable. Huh? They're going? I mean, it's fine. I mean,
well, Pandita has a thought.
As if, oh, it's three. Okay.
I know, I know.
But it's so important this to be the truth, and it's a very joyful thing, happy thing, something that we can strive for. But when the push comes to shove, sometimes I
wonder how am I adjust to this? This question of how, what is it in this situation that I need to learn? How do I progress, like favorably, right? And both were speaking so beautifully, just the openness and the humility and the readiness for anything. But is there also a part of it that actually I don't always need to understand
That's right.
what it is?
That's true.
And yeah.
So Guru Maharaj uses the term Hrishikesh. Was very interesting about certain circumstances of life. If you understand that all conscious feeling is coming from the Lord, you start to perceive that there are lots of different feelings that exist within life, and they're very unique to themselves. For example, there's a feeling of being humiliated. There's a feeling of being embarrassed. What is that feeling? How are you going to freaking put it in words? You can't. You know, but you know what it feels like. It's a feeling, right? There's a feeling of having your heart broken by someone that you're attached to. There's a feeling, right, of being insulted. All these things are feelings. There's also a physical feeling, right? If you get hit by a hammer, it feels different than if somebody stabs you with a knife, right? These are all like, but they're actual, like, unique feelings that are being reflected in your consciousness. And Hrishika Isha is a very amazing name of God. And it means the master of your perception. Yes. So that means these feelings, these exact feelings, are coming from the Lord. You will not experience it without His grace. And that exact feeling is not empty, purposeless, or something to be run away from or denied. My own experience of trying to practice this, for whatever it's worth, is that the feeling is very important. It's an exact counteraction to the disease that is within you or me. Like, there is a, I would say, psychophysical feeling that happens in certain circumstances. And like, I mean, I'm sure we've all felt this. It's not just you feel mental pain, but that mental pain is coincided with a circumstance, a physical pain, right? There's a...
Yeah, yeah.
Hare Krishna. And it has to be seen as coming from the Lord. And sometimes your intellect is seeking the reason this is happening. And your intellect is trying to define the lesson that you're supposed to learn. And it's not reliable. The Lord is reliable. And there is work happening from the feeling. Our mind is attuned to judging feelings. Actually, what's happening is just a feeling. But our mind is saying, this is a bad one. This is a good one. It's just a feeling, actually. You're more than that. But we're captured in certain ways. We have issues in certain ways. And the experience of the feeling that the Lord is giving you is to be felt. And it's pushing you somewhere. And to let it push you, we're going to resist it. What I felt, at least, is that we're going to resist it. We're going to immediately go, why I shouldn't be feeling this. I don't want to feel this. It's unfair that I'm feeling this. Actually, I'm feeling this because of this person who's really horrible. You know, blah, 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 blah. We're going to just start ascribing whatever, like we're like kung fu masters, like ninjas. You know, something comes toward us and instantaneously we're going to create a narrative how it's all bad and I'm the victim, right? I am the heroic victim and everything else is bad and I'm getting screwed over here. It's not wrong. That's wrong. I accept this. My master is giving this to me. And it is going to push you somewhere. And the minute, the very instant that it pushes you where you need to go, it will stop. The very instant, because it's not punishment. The Lord is not a punisher. He is graceful. And he's pushing you somewhere that you need to go. And it's a good place. The thing within yourself that you would never in a million years be able to find and resolve is getting resolved. And embrace it and let it happen. I mean, I had one circumstance where I was just literally in agony for weeks and weeks. Mental, physical pain. But the physical pain was caused by the mental pain. And finally I resolved, I accept this and I will feel this for the rest of my life if I need to. I'm ready. If I need to, if your wish is that I feel this for the rest of my life, I accept, I embrace it. And I did the exact opposite of what my mind wanted to do. Instead of turning away, running away, intoxicating myself, whatever it is, right? I don't want to feel this. I am going to close my eyes and I'm going to feel it like with full concentration, every permutation of what you're giving me to feel. I'll feel it all, try to even identify where in my mind this is and like the pulsing heart of the feeling. I'm going to like meditate on it. Where is it coming in my body? Oh, it's in my solar plexus. It's radiating. Like I'm going to feel the full thing as much as I can with full concentration. And honestly, some lesson came to me when I resolved that I'm not running from this anymore. And I had a realization inside myself that actually this is so merciful and I've done so wrong. And this is the gentle reformation of myself, the gentle correction. He's so gentle and merciful. Where my mind was thinking, so unfair. Opposite feeling, I did so wrong. And this is so gentle for me. And it's actually the truth. He is so sweet. He is so merciful. And he's taking us somewhere good, not bad. So that's all by the grace of Guru Maharaj and Gurudev that we can feel movement like that. And it's actually the truth. So you don't have to intellectually figure it out because your intellect's not reliable. But what he's giving you, you have to embrace like his guardianship, you know. Yeah, yes. Yeah, this is the bottom line. Dandavat Swandhi. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're giving the class.
I wish you.
Dandavat.
I think we're leaving that one, embracing the Lord's guardianship.
Atman and Vedin and giving everything, giving himself, humility, accepting the favorable, rejecting the unfavorable.
Embracing, sorry, which one did you say?
Embracing the Lord's guardianship.
Yep, Gopri Vivarana.
Atmani Vedanam.
Offering oneself.
That's the last.
Okay.
Offering oneself. Feeling oneself humble.
Doina.
Accepting everything that's favorable.
Accept the favorable, reject the
unfavorable.
And? Confidence in the protection of the Lord. Avashara Kive Krishna. Vishasa Palana.
So it comes in a certain order.
Yeah, Guru Maharaj in Prapanna Jivanamritam, the order that he gives is accept the favorable, reject the unfavorable, confidence in his protection, and then embracing his guardianship, Atmani Vedana, and then Doinya at the end. That's the order of Prapanna Jivanamritam that they're given. But, you know, it doesn't matter really. It's like they're all the six. But Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Saraswati Thakur, and Guru Maharaj have emphasized that they say the trunk of the tree of surrender, they're all limbs, but the trunk is embracing his guardianship. That's the most key practice because it means he's good. Because you cannot surrender until you actually know that the Lord is good. Because otherwise you'll have some suspicion. You have some suspicion of the circumstance. Well, maybe this actually is bad. You know what I mean? Like you have to know that he's good. And that's the key. He is your guardian. He does love you. Your full potential is contained in his will. And everything is bringing you to that. Like you have to know that at the basis, then everything else is like a flower from that.
It's so hard when you lose your senses, when you lose your mind.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's so hard when you've lost it. Then you pull yourself back under the control of self.
Yes.
And what was that?
Oh, it's so true.
And then you go back to your practicing life. Then you try to change that, get that out. You feel this is. And you feel the strength of the Lord guiding you properly in the proper mood again. It's hard to forgive yourself. But then you go on. Because the devotees are very merciful.
Yeah.
But anyway,
wow.
Thank you so much.
Thunderbolt. Appreciate you. Of course.
I asked about your favorite chapter in the beginning, and you said it's the first one.
Sorry, I didn't hear the beginning of what you said. I'm sorry.
About your favorite chapter, you said you like the first one, right?
Uh huh. Yeah, I do. I love the first chapter.
Yes, of profound. But can you comment on some verse from chapter 8?
Okay.
Because as Rakesh story said, like at Manivella, like to bring yourself as you are, because sometimes we read, you know, like some things cannot be offered to the Lord, like dirty things and maybe some dirty heart. And then like
chapter eight means humility.
Yes, it's mostly like Yamunacharya's verses, you
yeah,
know, like
yeah.
He says, oh, like and so on. But somehow it resonates. Maybe you like also something from this chapter or.
Well, I mean, overall, I would say, because even like Mahaprabhu's Nam Namakari Bhavadadni Sarva Shakti, that's in chapter 8. But why Nam Namakari Bhavadadni Sarva Shaktis? Because ultimately, Mahaprabhu, when he's expressing that, he's saying, this is me. I did this. I put myself in this circumstance. And I like chapter 8 because it rids us. I mean, for me, I'm just going to speak my own, however. It rids me of my victim complex.
I'm innocent.
I'm innocent. This is so unfair.
And I didn't do anything to deserve this.
It's strangely empowering. And it sounds very strange to say that. But if you didn't screw yourself up, then you have nowhere to go. Right? Because if you didn't screw yourself up, how can you get out of it? You know what I mean? Like, if otherwise, it's just like something greater than you screwed you up, and hopefully something greater than you will. Your agency is gone. You're not a free being. You're not consciousness, ultimately, right? So in humility, it's to say, I put myself in this circumstance. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong is being done to me. And to have that as the starting basis of my dealing with the situation. Of course, I can say in some level, I mean, like, for example, I've been in situations where, according to my narrative, somebody ripped me off for a lot of money. And I can say, oh, well, I was a victim in that circumstance, and that was unjust, and da-da-da-da-da. And on one level of experience, that's true, a relative level. And the deeper level, nothing was done wrong to me. That person was used by the Lord to teach me something. And it was fine. And not only that, I have some understanding. I've ripped off many people in my previous existence. I know this. Okay, and do I want to use my intelligence for that again? Like, nothing was wrong done to me. And so, properly is this occurring. Right? This is all occurring properly. Yes. This is exactly right.
Yes.
I want this. Not only that, I want this to occur. Let me be free of this. I'm done playing games on reality. Mm-hmm. And I like, personally, I like this idea of humility, because why humility? It means I'm at fault. Okay. I am at fault. Mm-hmm. I am at fault. And if I'm at fault, then good. I need your help. I want your help. And it's an honest, it makes the interaction honest. It makes the prayer honest. And it rids you of a victim complex. You know? So, I mean, personally for myself, that is what I like in it. And then, ultimately, it means that Sharanagati is the actual practice. Because, for example, now you can say, okay, read the first verse of Upadeshamrita. Vacho vegam, manasakrodha vegam, right? You have three vegam. Jiva vegam, my tongue. Udara vegam, oh, I want to fill myself. Upasta vegam. I'm in this body of all these urges. And maybe I decide, okay, I want to control my urges, right? And then I fail. Now what am I going to do? Okay, you have to control your urges. Okay, I tried, and now I was horrible at it. Okay, now what are you going to do? You just have to control your urges at some point, sometime. You know, it's like, well, you didn't do it, so, you know, you're screwed. No, it's like, oh, my Lord, I can't control my urges. And even when you fail, you can't fail into anything but Sharanagati. I want to surrender to you. Oh, let me control my urges. Oh, I can't control my urges. I surrender to you. There's no other thing except Sharanagati. Now you're my only hope, my Lord. I'm not good. Like, there's another, maybe we can sing this song tonight, Prapancha Podiya. Very beautiful song. I don't actually understand sadhana. I don't have any experience with worshiping. I'm not good at any of these things. So I surrender to you. Like, it's just very nice. And it's true. Actually, it's like not a great thing to become very good at something, like mechanical, and then think that you got good at it, and now it's like, all right, God, here I am. You know, I did it. So it's actually not nice. Humility is nice. And it's okay how you are, not some. It's like our imperfect imagination will imagine a perfect us. And then that perfect us, which is actually imperfect, is the one that we're going to surrender to Krishna. You know? It's not like that. I'm not going to surrender some imagination of my perfect self to Krishna. And so therefore, I'm not going to surrender right now because I'm not perfect yet. I'm going to surrender right now in the midst of my imperfection. Mm-hmm. That's real. Not some big delay or, you know, all that other stuff. That's another thing I love about chapter 8. It's basically, I'm flawed and you're merciful and I surrender to you.
If you do want to say goodbye to
Lakshmi. Oh, she is. Yeah, okay.
So. Okay. 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 Thank you.
I'm very grateful to both of you. I'm always grateful
to you. I really appreciate you. Oh, that's very nice meditation.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot. You can go on and on.
Yes.
That's kind of what it is. It is 1:38. My God.
Can I grab a box?
Yeah, please. Where is that? Mung beans.